Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Jake Baldwin with you guys here on Overtime. Coming up in about 60 minutes, we're going to get to Get a Grip, as we always do, at 9 o'clock. But a lot of things still to get into. We have Guardians. I mean, should be a short ways, probably somewhere around 8:20, going to be reacting to that game out in the South Side. Guards looking to avoid the sweep from the White Sox. But before we get to any of that, we do have to get to the most pressing thing said by our station's guest today. Let's do it with the station buzz. All right, let's kick things off. Brian Geltzeiler, Sirius XM NBA Radio on this morning with Ken and Anthony. And before Lima and Brian got into a little knock him out, drag him out, absolute brawl onto the air, there was questions being answered by Brian about one of them, and he talked about the idea of trading Evan Mobley for Jaylen Brown and the way he would view it if he was the Cavs.
I'd do it if I was Boston. I'm not sure I'm jumping to do it if I'm Cleveland. If you think that this is the best you're going to get from Evan Mobley, then sure, go ahead and make that deal. If you think there's another level for him to hit, and I happen to think, in spite of the fact that he's flatlined the last 2 years, I still think there's another level for him to hit offensively. I think his lack of production development, so to speak, on the offensive end of the floor has been more about usage and role than about Evan himself as a player. And I think some of this is just the realization of how dominant he can be. But part of that is building the confidence and getting the touches and having the offense run through him. And there just hasn't been enough of that here. Now, you may want to make the case to me that that's not going to happen here at all because of Donovan Mitchell. And you could certainly make that case. But if that is the case when it comes to that, then why turn around and pay $60-some-odd million to Jaylen Brown when you're not going to use him as a number one option when that's where he's comfortable as well? So I kind of look at it from the Cavs' way. I don't know that I'm jumping to do that.
And I don't think the Cavs should be jumping to do it, obviously. But I think that Brian hit on a really key piece when it comes to Evan Mobley. I think a lot of people in Cleveland have kind of accepted the idea of this is who Evan is. He's not going to get any better. This is just, he's a really good player, but he's never going to be a great player. I think that's just patently false. I mean, Evan is being forced into essentially being the third option on the team. You immediately got good. Basically, right after drafting Evan, what, a year's time he got to spend without Donovan Mitchell. As soon as you got there, you were thrusted into the playoffs. You were immediately trying to be a contender. Like, Evan did not get the, here, you take over the reins, you show us everything you have, and let's get your development going by running the offense through you, by allowing you to be one of the premier players on the team. Even when Donovan was brought here, it was still Donovan and Darius. Right? That's who was going to show out. And I think Evan does have another level probably to unlock. I just don't know you're ever going to find it out with him playing next to Donovan. I don't think you probably do ever find that. I think he eventually has to become more of an emphasis in the offense. You either have to run it through him or you have to, I mean, stop having two ball dominant guards that love to score the basketball in your backcourt. You have to get somebody who's a pass first. And that's pretty hard to find in today's NBA. Like, you, oddly enough, I think better roster building for this team is finding a mundane point guard. Like, just a guy who doesn't put up a ton of points, a guy who is very unselfish. But obviously, the Cavs have had their troubles finding guys like that, too. They tried to get that, thought they were getting that Lonzo Ball last year. And I just spent some time last segment telling you how much of a disaster that was, as if you didn't already know. I just, it feels like such a move that, yeah, of course Boston wants to take it. Jaylen Brown is a depreciating asset. He's turning, I think, 30 this year. He's going to be playing at age 30. And he doesn't want to be in Boston. And we're acting like Jaylen Brown is the messiah to basketball. He's good. He helps the Cavs. But that is somebody that Boston desperately wants to get out from under. They don't want him on the team. Him and Tatum aren't playing nice with each other anymore. And Jaylen Brown wants to be the star of his own team. He wants to be there. He wants to be the guy leading the way. And you just haven't found the pathway to making that happen. Things just continue to get worse and worse. And I don't think it's the price that you pay for Jaylen Brown right now. As much as I'd love the shakeup and I'd like to have a player like Brown on my team, I just don't know that truthfully he's worth that right now. And it makes a whole lot of sense for you to go through and make that deal. But it wouldn't surprise me if the Cavs make it. All right, Danny Cunningham, Locked On Cavs, the Inside Shot Substack on this morning with Ken and Anthony as well. And Danny was talking about the Cavs needing to improve as you take a look at the rest of the East.
I think it's a realistic thing to say, hey, if we just ran this back, we should expect to be better next year. But I don't know that better is good enough to win a title, which is what the goal needs to be. Like, if they run this back, I expect them to be better. I expect them to be a top four seed again. I expect them to be a better team in the playoffs, but I also expect New York to maybe be a little better. I expect Boston to maybe be a little bit better next year. I expect Detroit. I expect Indiana. Like, I expect the Eastern Conference as a whole to be better. So while the Cavs might be better if they just run it back, I don't know that better is good enough. And I think that's kind of the danger in just saying, you know what, we only had, like you said, 26 games with James Harden. We only had 4 games with our starting lineup together. We had 0 games where the team was fully healthy. All those things can be true, but I also think you need to look at it and say, but we still need to improve. Like, just getting better through continuity is helpful, but it's also not everything either.
Yeah, like, I don't know how you look at the remainder of the East right now and think that the Cavs are, I mean, anywhere near close to the title favorites. They have shown year after year with a very similar roster construction to not be there. And yes, like, the East is improving significantly. They are getting to a point where I don't know that New York's getting any worse heading into this next year. Indiana's going to be back. Boston is likely going to be better in some capacity. And I think you still look at a lot of the teams on that fringe outside looking up. Obviously, we talked about the Heat, Orlando. I've mentioned a lot of these teams over and over and over again, like the Hawks and the Pistons, all of them improving. And as the rest of the East is trying to play catch up and doing a pretty good job at it, and not even playing catch up to the Cavs, it feels like that's the team that's just staying put. You can't accept your reality. You have to find a way to get better. You have to find a way to improve. In accepting your fate for what it is basically just, I mean, rolling over. Like, I don't think, yeah, sure, as Danny put it, you might be a top 4 seed in the East again. You might be a really good basketball team, but I don't think that's what you're settling for. I think the trade for James Harden immediately took you out of the, hey, I mean, if this team just ends up being around top 4, maybe gets to a conference finals, that would be all right for this iteration. No, you tossed away 10 years of a career to swap out Darius Garland for James Harden. You're telling me you're going for it. So you better find a way to get out and go for it. And that is trying to improve the roster this offseason. So you can't just let it go by the side. You have to try to improve, and you have to show some way, somehow, you're actively trying to get that done. All right, let's move to the world of football. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. We stick with the morning show. Ken and Anthony rounding out their 3 guests today. Talking about Brendan Sorsby and what the CBA has to say about his draft eligibility.
The CBA doesn't include an integrity test. It says if you were eligible for the draft in April and then you became not eligible after that, you're eligible for the supplemental draft. It doesn't say if we decide to let you in. Now, there's language in there basically saying, well, we can say we don't feel like having a supplemental draft. But the response to that is, have you ever not had one when you have an eligible player apply? Are you specifically targeting this player and breaking from your established precedent?
And all the answers in that point towards yes with the NFL right now. Again, like, I am not somebody who is going to run to the defense of Brendan Sorsby over and over and over again. But as we mentioned during yesterday's show, this is the NFL basically just going behind everything that they've ever done and completely flipping their topic on it, completely flipping their stance and just trying to box out Brendan Sorsby because he gambled on the game. Right? He gambled on football. That is enough for them to try to lay down the hammer and say absolutely no. So whatever you think of Sorsby, whatever the public perception ends up being of him, which is obviously going to be negative, but no matter how negative that gets, it doesn't take away the idea that the NFL is wrong in this. Again, as much as it is a dramatic comparison, you compare it to the court of law, the public perception, it could be that you did wrong, you contributed to a murder. If you don't fall under the actual laws of you committed a murder, you can be actually charged for the crime you're being tried for, you lose the battle in court. And this is likely going to go to the court of law, and the NFL is likely, again, going to lose the battle. They're standing on a moral high ground that should not exist. The NFL is 1,000% in the wrong in this. They cannot just go through, basically say, oh yeah, we don't want the supplemental draft. That's not going to happen. You've never done it before. You are singling out Brendan Sorsby. It cannot happen. And as much as they would like it to, as much as I think a lot of fans would like that to happen, and even, I mean, to a degree, I'd be all right if it did, doesn't mean that you win the battle. The NFL ends up being in the wrong here. They don't get a free pass. All right, let's keep the NFL talk going. Ashley Bastock, Cleveland.com, on with Afternoon Drive today and talking about how the players have responded to Todd Monken's coaching style.
I mean, just from the aspect of his very sort of candid, old school ways of thinking, like, I do think it's very opposite from what was here in the past with Kevin Stefanski, and I think that has served him well. But, I mean, yeah, you do sort of wonder, like, if the wins don't come, if, number one, if fans get sick of that, or, number two, I think how it plays in the locker room, obviously. But I think that can sort of be said for any coaching style at any given moment, right? Like, if wins aren't coming, then it's going to be questioned, and it's going to be questioned if it's the right fit for that group at that time. But I mean, I do think as of right now, it's like undeniable to me that he's bought himself some goodwill, both with the fan base and then I think a lot with those returning players.
And I think that Ashley is right here. I think a lot of the players have probably responded to it, Todd, because there's such a dramatic shift from him and Kevin Stefanski. I think fans have absolutely reacted to that. But ultimately, whether or not you like a coaching style is going to play out by how many wins and losses get put on the board. You can be the most hard-ass, tough-nosed, I mean, just coach that is absolutely out there working you every single day. And if you win four wins, if you win four games because of it, everyone's going to be like, so we're getting battle-tested for absolutely nothing right now, right? We are getting put through the ringer for nothing here. And again, if you go out and do it and you win 12 games, everybody's going to turn around and be like, yeah, that prepared us for it, and vice versa. It's like, we didn't need to work that hard. Great job by coach. He got us prepared in other ways. It's not working. They're going to turn around and be like, we probably could have been going harder. And fans and media and everybody else is going to do the exact same thing. It's no surprise. And you just sit here and again, I think, continue to draw your questions about it. But hey, those aren't going to be answered until the season starts. And no matter what Todd does, no matter how he handles a lot of the practices and things that are going to be happening right now, wins and losses are going to base whether or not people question if it's going to work. Right? Losses are going to lead to questions. Wins are going to lead to a blind eye no matter what's happening. It's just the way that coaches get judged in the NFL, and I don't think there is a you just go through and do it and you win everybody over because of it. All right, that'll do it for the Station Buzz. When we come on back here in about 5 minutes, the Guardians all wrapped up on the South Side. We'll get you the score and all the reaction coming with three and out right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. All right, we will have the Cavs draft pick set for 34th overall right here when it does take place. That should just be in, the very short time coming up here. Draft is underway for all of those following through at home. Ohio State getting a player on the board to start the second round. They'll call Bruce Thornton a guard, I think, a guard forward, kind of a wing player in general. But a Buckeye getting right there at the top of the second. And Bruce is a hell of a player, so it'll be interesting to see him go. He's going to Houston after New York decided to trade back and pick up yet another second-round pick. That's now 6 second-round picks acquired by them in this draft.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But Guardians are all wrapped up, so we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about them as they do take down the Chicago White Sox by a final score of 4-3 in extra innings. It took 10 tonight, but let's go ahead and react to this one the only way we know how, with 3 and out.
Postgame reaction on The Fan starts now. It's time for 3 and out. Overtime with Jake Vulnick, Sports Radio 92.3 The Fan.
All right, kicking things off in the top half of the inning. Even the wins can't be pretty. Guardians had a clear pathway to make this game done and over with. In the ninth inning, 3-1. You obviously got an incredible start out of Tanner Bibee tonight. I mean, he was, despite the rain delay, absolutely locked down. 6 innings, gave up 3 hits, did not give up a run. And, I mean, you go through with a 3-1 lead heading into the ninth, and Cade Smith gives up back-to-back jacks on back-to-back pitches and sends you into extra innings, almost cost you the game, but ultimately just sent you into extra innings. And even when we got to extras, Guardians were able to push across the run, and Sean Armstrong decided to load the bases. I mean, had to get a ground out, a force at home plate. Patrick Bailey couldn't get a clean transfer, couldn't get into a double play, and it had to be a diving tag out of the base by Kyle Manzardo at first to end the game because Sean Armstrong didn't get off the mound. Like, again, it can't look pretty. Even when you're getting a win, it looks ugly. But this is now, I mean, back-to-back. I don't even think you can call it blown saves because I don't think yesterday technically counted for Cade Smith because he came in when the guards were losing in the eighth or the two nights ago. But this is certainly a blown save. He had a 3-1 lead, and you didn't even get through a full inning. You ended up throwing 28 pitches. Cade was well off tonight. And, I mean, this series was very unlike him in general. He has been strong for a long time going after the rough start to begin the year. But we have seen now the cracks in the armor at the back end of the bullpen. And from the bullpen as a whole, it continues to be scary. But, I mean, Cade was just, he wasn't good tonight. And you could have used him to be. Again, they survived the win, but I would just like one pretty win out of the gate would just be a really nice thing to have. But right now, it just feels like we can't really have nice things, and we're just going to continue to have to live with that, I guess, for the time being. Let's go ahead and switch sides. Khalil Watson is the offense right now. And I don't even think I would ever had to have said those words, especially after, I mean, Khalil obviously got off to a slow start, but since he got his first hit, he's been rolling. He was the entire offense today. He accounted for every single one of the runs batted in by the Guardians, because the only other way he scored a run was a Patrick Bailey bases loaded walk that drove one across. Every run that actually had a swing attached to it was Khalil Watson today. And on top of that, he was your offense for the entirety of this series. He was 5-for-9 with 6 RBIs of the 9 runs that the Guardians ended up scoring in this entire series. Like, again, it's great for Khalil Watson, and it's a really positive sign from a young player getting off to now, I mean, a much better start, getting a really good series under his belt, getting a ton of confidence to build off of. I'm happy for Khalil Watson. Really happy things are working out. But from a Guardians perspective as a whole, that's terrifying. I'm letting the guy who's basically got 2 series under his belt go through and have to be my entire offense, save me, when he wasn't even supposed to get the call-up in the first place. He was still supposed to be waiting in on the back end. Maybe he would have been called up over, like, Stuart Fairchild. He certainly would have been called up instead of Petey Halpin. Either one of those guys could be here on the roster instead of. But, I mean, to put that much faith, to have that much just rely on the back of such a young player who, again, is not like a, you know, I mean, number one overall pick like Travis Bazzana, did not have the hype surrounding him like Chase DeLauder. But to just call on a guy and rely on him that heavily, I mean, it's terrifying for what the Guardians offense is right now becoming. It is not good. It is, I mean, an atrocious offense. 9 runs across 3 games is a fairly low number to be sitting at, not one you should feel confident walking away as a Guardians fan. Again, I'll take the win. Like, in the regular season, a win is a win. You take it. You run with it any way you can get it. But if I'm looking for reasons to stay positive, as the Guardian season continues to progress and you have to play Seattle, Texas, and then right back to playing the White Sox in what is a disastrous stretch from the end of June to the beginning of July, I'm going to need a lot more guys other than Khalil Watson to step up and be really effective for you when we get, you know, farther into the month of June. I need something else. Khalil Watson cannot be it, and tonight he was everything. Again, big props up, hats off to him, but it's not something that's leaving me feeling really good about the Guardians in this moment either. Let's go ahead and get to the bottom half of the inning. Eric Sobrowski still isn't back, but he's getting there. He's starting to go on the way. We are looking for the healthy version of Eric Sobrowski, and we did not get that tonight. We do not have that, but he's there, right? Like, he's somewhere in the mix. He went just 2/3 of an inning, throwing 15 pitches, and gave up a run off of 2 hits tonight. I mean, he had to be eventually replaced by Colin Holderman, but it was a fine result. Like, again, I think we're trending back to that. You were hoping to get a healthier Eric Sobrowski back, and I think that helps shore up a lot of the back end of this bullpen, because I think he is a really good pitcher. I think he is really nice out of the bullpen, and a lot of the guys that we've talked to, Justin Lotta, Kid Krakus, all of the Guardians guests that we talked to, have highlighted Sobrowski's return, a healthy, fully back return, as being, you know, potentially the major piece that just gets the Guardians into the spot that they need to be and feel comfortable with where they're at in the bullpen. But again, I don't want to take negatives out of it. I don't want it to be an absolute pity fest, but there is just still not a healthy Eric Sobrowski on the mound. Like, he has not reached that point. He did not look good again tonight, and you are going to need him. So you want to continue throwing him. You want to continue to give him opportunities until he eventually shifts back into that. But for every moment that you have until you don't, you are putting yourself in bad situations. I mean, this is now the second appearance for Sobrowski since coming back from his injury, and it's not like the first one went any better. He gave up 2 runs on 1 hit, going up against Houston back on the 19th. And that's not really going to cut it either. Like, you've pitched a total of 1 inning across your last 2 appearances. It's not good for Sobrowski. He's not pitching in high leverage situations right now. And still things feel like they're crumbling apart alongside of the Guardians. But again, you need him for the bullpen to be back. You need Sobrowski to be a contributing member. So I'm all right sticking it out, but for the time being, it is shaky, shaky roads every time Sobrowski is going to touch the mound. Let's go ahead and see if we can do a lot better than Cade Smith with his blown save tonight and get a save ourselves. All right, Guardians with the win improved to 42-39, draw just even with the Chicago White Sox, who are now 41-38. So you are in an even spot inside of the AL Central standings. You're going to feel, I guess, okay about that with where it stands. You did lose a game in this series, but again, the matchups don't tend to get a whole lot easier as we get into these later matchups. Guardians are going to be back in action. They get the day off tomorrow to think about their woes of, you know, 3 of their last 9 walking away with a win and losing each of their last 3 series. But they are going to be on the bump Friday, 7:10 first pitch. Joey Cantillo going to be taking the bump for the Guards, and you're going up against Luis Castillo, who has not been good this year and is one of the major contributors on why the Mariners are not having a hot season. 2-6 with a 5.22 ERA, and coming off the back of an appearance where he went 4 innings against the Red Sox, giving up 5 runs, 4 of them earned. So it is continued to be a little bit of a rough stretch. He gave up 5 runs in the previous appearance. Since then, they haven't won a Luis Castillo start in his last 3. So he should be signs pointing forward. Guardians get back home. Should be a nice thing, but we'll see how that goes. And again, a 3-game weekend set coming back home to play Seattle is what's on the horizon. But I want to hear from you guys. 216-474-0092. Guardians are winners tonight by a final score of 4-3 in extras. I think ultimately, and something that we're probably going to talk about more as the show rolls on, this was not the type of game that stops the panic. Like, if anything, I think the entire series that we just watched play out against Chicago, but you could make an argument that the Guardians were in a position to win all three of those games. It is still one that brings in, I think, a ton of doubt, worry, concern, and it just doesn't leave you feeling in a positive spot again. They are a very impactful games that you're playing against the White Sox, but it's not like Chicago's some kind of juggernaut. It's not like they're just going to be sitting there, I mean, standing in your way of anything successful that you can do. And again, you're playing the Mariners now, who are about the exact same spot that the White Sox are in right now. You're going to be playing the Rangers, who are just a couple of games under 500. Like, you're continuing to play, I mean, baseball teams that are in the mix, absolutely inside of the hunt. You do not have easy series coming up, and you're going to have to play some of your best baseball since these guys have been out. Even when you play Minnesota, has been on a hot streak before you, I mean, finally get any sense of relief playing the Miami Marlins, who have still found themselves over 500 this year. So, like, and again, it's not a team that I have an utter belief in, not a team that I am all that confident is going to be great, but just take a look and see what you have in front of you. I think there is still a ton of reason to be concerned. I don't feel confident this team can win the AL Central. I don't feel confident they're staying afloat. They are in, I mean, major troubles with all the injuries they have piled up. It is not live on. It is not stay above, you know, head above water. It's try to play 500 baseball, especially while Jose is down. They are failing at that miserably right now. Again, 3-6 in your last 9 games is not a good place to be. You want to find yourself in a different spot. You want to find yourself in a better situation, and they're going to have to find a way. And I would say the top of the order is immediately where I look to is a spot that has to step up. Travis Bezzano, another bad day, 0-5 today. I am going to need positive signs pushing forward for what we're looking at right now when it comes to the Guardians. Again, 216-474-0092. Guards losers today, or excuse me, winners today by a final score of 4-3. They felt like losers. Should have had the win. But winners today by a final score of 4-3. When we come on back here in about 5 minutes, the pick for number 34 is in, and it's not the Cavs, as far as I see. Or it might be the Cavs. I got to see who made this pick at 34. I believe the Cavs made it. Malik Thomas came off the board, which is going to be interesting. I don't have official word, but it seems like Cleveland who made the pick. So Malik Thomas is going to be a real interesting one to break down. And we will, again, coming up here at 8:40 on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. Get a grip coming up here at 9 o'clock. But the Cavs have made their decision. They do stick and pick at 34, and it is Arkansas guard Malik Thomas. He's listed at 6'5". He stands about 6'3", barefoot. So I think the immediate thing that people are going to turn to is that this is, I mean, a slightly undersized guard. It's not atrocious. You didn't draft somebody who is 6', but I mean, a lot of the guards that we're looking at that are successful in the NBA, more so of them now standing a little bit taller, but it's not anything egregious. 6'3" is right around the about right height. Is a freshman last year at Arkansas, and you heard in Michael's update, but averaging about 15.5, 4.5 in his one season. I don't know. It leaves me like it's not a surprising pick. I am not stunned by the fact that they made this pick. But at the exact same time, I don't think I agree with it. Like, there's not a ton of players that I loved, and that's part of drafting at 34. There's not going to be a ton of guys that you love. There's going to be, I mean, critical flaws in every single player that you're looking at that point in the second round. I just don't know that it's an immediate, like, impact player that is immediately stepping in onto this team. I don't know that he is going to immediately play a role. Feels like another developmental guard, which it feels like they have about 9 of. I think I would have just preferred Kobe to show me something different, right? Show me something that is a change in the philosophy and the way that you build your team. And I didn't get that. Right, it's still a priority on let me go through and make sure I have a bunch of guards and guys who stand right about that 6'5", 6'4" mark Guys who are going to be pretty decent defensively, shoot the three well. It's the exact archetype that the Cavs and Kobe Altman have fallen in love with. This is Max Strus. This is Sam Merrill. And he's more of a combo guard than I think those two guys are more, I mean, pure three-point shooters, like 3-and-D type of guys. And Malik does have more of an ability to get to the rim. He is more of a ball handler. There are things that are different about it. But again, that's kind of a ton of the players that we end up looking at anyway when we talk about, I think when you make the transition from college to the NBA is, yeah, you're going to handle the ball more in college. Like Sam Merrill, essentially when he was in college, is pretty close to playing point guard. He had the ball in his hands a ton. He was the best player on the floor. That doesn't happen when you get to the NBA, and I don't know that this is an immediate, you just slot him in as your backup point guard either. Like, again, 19 going in the second round screams to me, I'm going to try to develop this kid. He might get play time in the regular season. Is he stepping in for you in the playoffs? I don't think so. Again, it's 34th overall. I think you can say that about a lot of guys, but I can't tell you I fall in love with the pick. It just seems more like Kobe Altman falling in love with another Kobe Altman type player instead of doing what is actually necessary, which is changing something. Like, the priority to go through and get so many guards is something that honestly makes me scratch my head when it comes to the Cavs. Because you do have James Harden and Donovan Mitchell. Like, and by the time you get to playoff time, those two guys are on the floor for essentially 48 minutes a game. You are not playing a single lineup that does not have at least one of them playing. Donovan is capable of running an offense, and the offense is going to go through him when he's the only guy out there. James Harden is obviously capable and almost necessary that he plays the point guard. So you're putting the ball in their hands a ton anyway. If your argument is regular season, Craig Porter Jr. is back on a four-year contract. You have another guard to play that spot. I get you need bench, you know, depth off the bench. Tyrese Proctor is a developmental piece, a guy who the Cavs have been asking to dribble the ball more, you know, since he's been brought in. It just feels like you're clogging that room, and I still look around at this team and go, you don't have a wing, you don't have a backup big, and again, I think both of those, I mean, semi-type of archetypes were sitting there available to you. You had Henry Vassar, who, yes, is a little bit slow, isn't even really truly a stretch five, like he doesn't shoot the three well enough, I think, to consider him one, even at the college level. I don't think it's the greatest fit in the world, but at least you show me you're prioritizing a backup big and changing something, right? He provides a little something that I don't think anybody else on the team provides, which is a big with a probably more reliable ability to shoot the three and something that I can develop. I think you go out and talk about a guy who was taken, I think it's now, what, two picks later, and Bobby Miller out of Cincinnati. Again, not a guy that I've at all fallen in love with, but you're talking about a guy who's 6'11". He is, I mean, skilled at the basketball, able to, I mean, rotate it around. He's an offensive guy at 6'11" that I can trust to play the four, another backup big type, and he's going to...
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Be much more playing on the interior, but I just also don't know that I mean, I would have liked to see that more than I would have liked to see Malik Thomas, even if I believe in Malik more as a player. And I mean, listen, we're talking about guys on the second round of the NBA draft. I'm not pretending like I sat here and watched 16,000 games of college basketball this year and can tell you a world about Malik Thomas and tell you a world about Bobby Miller. I mean, a lot of this comes from a lot of the write-ups that have been done, a lot of the mock drafts, going back and watching some tape, but I think that you're more so leaning into this idea that I just don't know that I would have picked a guard, especially here. I'm picking a guy who is, you know, a 6'3", 6'4". And I think is once again trying to fill in a role that is already filled on the Cavs by multiple different players. I just don't know that you needed it. 216-474-0092. Malik Thomas is the Cavs pick at 34. You love it. You hate it. I want to go out to you guys. And Ken is in Brooklyn, wants to jump in. What's going on, Ken?
Has Kobe taken stupid pills?
I could make an argument he's done it before. He might be doing it now.
Are you serious? Another small guard. I got two, three guys after him at 6'9", 6'10".
Mm-hmm.
Don't you understand anything, Kobe? We should have kept Mike Gansey instead of Kobe Altman. I mean, this is insanity. This team has no guard bigger than 6'5". Because Jalen Tyson is a forward. I mean, this is absurdity. Though. We needed another big. We got two on the board, plus Henry Vestar that you just mentioned is on the board. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is going on? I want some answers. Kobe, I want you fired. Because you don't know what you're doing. When you take a 6'3 guard and you got a plethora of them, then you shouldn't be having a job anymore.
Yeah, I
get
mean,
out. Hey, get Ken, out now. Get out. Get out. I'm going to run you out of town.
Hey, Ken, get out. I think it's fair rebuttal, and I appreciate the call. I mean, listen, obviously, I think that we can bring in probably a lot of attention on Kobe Altman. And probably something we're going to do later on in the show. Talk a little bit more about Kobe and the spot that he's in as a GM, because I think for the results that you've gotten, it feels really safe. I don't know that you're all that much in a just pure safety net because you brought in Donovan Mitchell that you once sat in a couple of years ago if you're Kobe. But again, it is something that it's head scratching to me. I struggle with the you're drafting at 34 anyway. How great of a player are you getting? But I hate to bring it back up, and it's definitely Ken's guy. Ryan Kalkbrenner last year was who Ken highlighted. Cavs never had a chance to draft him. But I said it a couple of times last night. Like, that's a guy who was playing 15 minutes a game in the playoffs, in the two play-in games, I should say, for the Charlotte Hornets. Like, you can find impact players at this point. And they're not going to be, you know, guys who are your starting five or guys who are going to go out there and drop 25 a game in the NBA, more likely than not. But there is a chance that you find contributing players in this. Maybe Malik Thomas is that, even if it is, and even if Malik's a really good player, and I hope that he is, obviously, I'm rooting for anybody that gets drafted by the Cavs. I'm not going to actively go out there and try to say that Malik's going to be a bad player, but it is a roster construction question more than it is anything. You're taking another guard that's not, you know, 6'6", and Ken said he didn't have one over 6'5". That James Harden is sitting there bordering on that, 6'5", 6'6". He's about the only one, and obviously not a defensive guy, and he's 37 years old at this point. But it feels like everybody who you just continue to invest time, continue to invest money and assets into, like, how many guards and undersized players can I continue to draft? How many guys of the exact same ilk can I continue to put on the exact same air on this roster with guys who are just like them? Right, this is the type of pick where I do look at it, and I think it is a misunderstanding of how to build a roster from Kobe Altman. Like, I want something to change this year. I want something to be out there. I just don't know that I'm getting it. I don't know that you had a great player to fill it again, but I would just like an attempt at something different. Like, when you are so starved at the wing, even if I can get a guy who can step in and play 10 minutes off the bench and just give me really good defense out of the three spot, if I can basically draft Dean Wade at pick 34, and just get a guy who's a good on-ball defender, that feels like a win. Like, that feels like somebody who's going to have more of a pathway to play, who's going to have more of an opportunity to get on the floor and actually make an impact for the Cavs come playoff time than a guy like Malik Thomas. Like, you can be a good defender. At the end of the day, you are limited by your size, you are limited by what you're able to do, and you're going to be stuck in a lineup if you played in the playoffs alongside Donovan and alongside James Harden. And what we've seen out of Malik Thomas in college is a guy who likes to score the basketball and needs the ball in his hands a hell of a lot. Like, you are just recreating, I mean, essentially trying to rebuild back the exact same team that you had. Like, is this Dennis Schroeder replacement? Because I don't know that I really needed a massive Dennis Schroeder replacement on this team. Again, You have to find guys who are on cheap contracts to make an impact for you, but you're already starting the development. That's supposed to be Tyrese Proctor. That's supposed to be Craig Porter Jr., who you decided to bring back for a fourth year, and he still has basically not touched the floor in the playoffs. He still barely touches the floor at the end of the regular season. Like, where is the development? Where are the guys? You take so many stabs on guys just like this, and it's like not one of them ends up coming through and actually playing significant, any sort of significant play time for you, right? I can't even get him off the bench just a rotational, the ninth guy off the bench in a playoff rotation. I can't find any of that. And yet you just reach into the well again. Like, you re-dip, you double, you triple dip, you go all the way into everything that you can find, everything. You're trying to exhaust every single corner of this exact type of build. Well, it just doesn't yield the results that you want it to. Like, at some point, the page has to turn. And you had all of the opportunity again. There were several players that were of interest that I think fit a build that would actually help the Cavs. And you just go back down the well of Malik Thomas. Like, I don't need a backup guard that badly. I don't need a backup point guard. I don't need somebody that tasked with handling the basketball. I know that we talk about Donovan not being able to do it all on his own, and you need somebody next to him. That's the point of getting James Harden. And you have guys to take that weight off of them in the regular season. By all means, go play the Craig Porter Juniors of the world. Go play Tyrese Proctor in the regular season. Give them a break. I don't care. This team's getting to the playoffs, and at the end of the day, that's what matters, right? Get to the playoffs, make something happen. But I mean, I'll eat my words if Malik Thomas turns into a guy who's, playing 15 minutes a game and giving you great minutes in the playoffs. Gladly. I just don't know if that's something that I can legitimately think is actually going to happen, especially when you're drafting, again, a 19-year-old at pick 34. 216-474-0092. Do you like the pick of Malik Thomas? Are you more in my boat? I just don't think Kobe has a great understanding of what this roster needs right now. We're going to talk about it more and some on Kobe's draft security. We'll push Get a Grip a little bit later back in the show, because at 9:20 we're also talking to Greg Swartz. We'll get his thoughts on the Malik Thomas pick as well. All coming up on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.